What is going on, y'all? And thank you again so very much for joining us here today on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, fresh back from Fright Fest, that's a mouthful, is Kyle, well, and he's not, is Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here, back from Texas Fright Fest. Yeah.
How was it?
It was cool, man. This is the second one of these I've been to.
Well, first of all, let me say, I saw the photos. Little Fizzy ain't little anymore, in case y'all were wondering. Little Fizzy's tall Fizzy. He's medium Fizzy, mid Fizzy.
He's like 5'10 now.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Looks like he, and you said he had a great time.
He had a wonderful time.
But is this one of those places? Because I know you know very little about what's going on over there unless it took place in the 80s and early 90s.
Yeah, that's right.
So is he like your guide through this world? Is you're like, what is all this about? And he's explaining you this and yes. this and this. Because yeah. I would need that if I'm going anywhere like that.
So you're 100% right. So when there's somebody like the creator of Gremlins or like Tom Salvini or whatever. I know those guys because, like you said, I watched horror movies back in the 80s and 90s. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere after like 2000s, I quit watching them. Oh, so all the new movies, I don't know who these people are, but if it's like what's his name?
Warwick.
Warwick Davis was there. I know who that is because I know Willow and I know, you know, Leprechaun.
Yeah.
So the old guys, I know who those are, but there's a lot of new people I have no idea.
Well, like Lillard. You're like, I know Lillard. I've saw Scream, right? Like,
yeah.
Bro.
I remember him when he played in Hackers.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
And like the first one I ever went to was in San Antonio, and that was like in March. And so we met the guy that plays Art the Clown in the Terrifier series. I don't know who that dude is because I've only seen one of those movies.
You couldn't, if you walked past him on the street, you'd never know.
Never know.
Yeah.
But it's so interesting, the people watching. I love to watch the people.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is a thing I didn't know was a thing. And there's like thousands of people into it. I mean, it was packed. The vendors are cool.
We need to go like we talked about.
I almost bought you a basket case. Remember the show Basket Case?
Yes.
They had one, a rubber one, but they wanted like $80 for it. Like,
he did bring me a Predator t-shirt, y'all.
Of course. I got one for Pop-Pop, too.
Awesome.
You and Pop-Pop have matching Predator t-shirts.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, why not?
We have to get our pictures made in our shirts.
So some of the people were dressed up as things.
Was there any Predators?
Movies. No, I didn't see any Predators. I did see American Werewolf in London where a guy had the red jacket that David wears and the backpack on and the wolf head. That was
pretty cool. I like that.
But then there's people just dressed as Sub-Zero or Scorpion from
Mortal
Kombat.
Now just plain Zero. Running Man
fans? There's furries there. You know, it's
just like everybody, everything. It was just, and you said it was busy.
Man, packed. When we first pulled up, it looked like the zombies trying to climb the wall in World War Z. It looked like ants. Like you kicked over a fire ant mound.
And it was just going crazy. I made a mistake. When you pulled it in your mind, you're like, I made a big mistake.
I'm just thinking like, I'm doing this for Luke. But this
I hope
is
he takes
terrible.
Care of me
but
when
it
I'm
wasn't
older.
Terrible. And I realized that that line was for people that hadn't bought their tickets. We bought ours online months in advance.
Yeah. You actually planned this out.
Yeah. So I don't know. It was interesting.
It was cool.
It's very cool.
And you and I have talked about doing Gen Con for a long time. I wanted to go up there. Mm-hmm. And then we've kind of like, well, maybe we just would rather go to Gary Con.
I think I'd rather go to Gary Con.
Yeah, because it's just all going to be some TTRPG stuff.
Only D&D.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the other stuff, it's all kinds of things.
Yeah.
You know, like you've been to the small ones around here where there's people testing new games and stuff.
Yeah, like ReaperCon's fun.
Yeah, it's cool, but I'm not really interested in that.
Yeah, not a lot of those games. Yeah, I'm not down with. I'm just a D&D nerd.
And I've been watching lots of playoff hockey, and everything I predicted has been not what I thought would happen.
So it's been a fun season.
So it's been exciting, yeah.
That's
I mean, my
times.
Team's long since been removed, but I've been watching.
Long since been removed, he
yeah,
says.
Yeah.
That's a good way of saying they got stomped.
They did.
They got stomped. Well, enough of the Fright Fest. Let's get into some real frightening festival things. I've got you a story here.
Okay.
Now, you know, everybody knows, like, I like the idea of the little people, right? Little people in the woods. Salon knows it, too. Get a load of this. This took place between 2013 and 2018 in Homer, Alaska. There was a later return visit in 2021. This is what he sent me. And I think that it's actually been talked about on, I think they had a thing when they did the aliens in Alaska. I think this was discussed. But this is what goes down. It says here, I lived in Homer, Alaska between 2013 and 2018. And during that time, I saw a number of bizarre creatures around the property where I was living. The house was on a small street surrounded by tall trees. Most of those trees have since died or been cut down. Now, at first, I didn't understand what I was seeing. There was a strange movement outside, especially in the trees near the house. So one night, I'm in my room with my boyfriend. and I had noticed something moving outside. So I asked to use his binoculars. And when I looked through them towards the trees, I saw something that I could only describe as a little man. It was hopping from tree to tree. Now, the way it moved was strange. It almost looked like it was dancing around in the branches. Now, it didn't seem to care about gravity or falling. It just kept hopping and moving through the trees as if it belonged there. Now, about a month later, I began noticing more of them. Then I started seeing them more often. Eventually, it seemed like there were hundreds of these things around the trees near the house. And at one point, I began to worry that maybe I was losing my mind because no one else seemed to be seeing what I was seeing. Now, my boyfriend didn't believe me at first. Then one night, he saw them too. And at this time, as time went on, I noticed something else. The tree where these creatures moved and round began to die. It seemed like the same trees they had climbed or hopped through would slowly decline. So I started wondering whether contact with these beings was somehow killing the trees. Now in 2018, partially because of the strange activity around the property, my family and I moved to Kodiak. After moving, well, I never saw them again. But in 2021, I returned to the area with a Discovery Channel crew while filming aliens in Alaska. When I saw the patch of forest near the house again, I was shocked. The trees were dead. They were all rotten and black. I don't know what these things were, but I don't think they were from here. I think they were aliens. And that's what Lisa goes on. And she says here that she later drew the entities as she remembered them. Now, the drawings depict thin, pale, elongated humanoids with oversized heads, dark eyes, long limbs, and a crouched or crawling posture. What they look like are tiny crawlers. Like, imagine a covey, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
A nest of tiny, pale crawlers is basically what she drew and described was moving around in these trees.
See, when you were originally telling the story, I was thinking Fae.
Fae, yeah.
But this sounds more extraterrestrial.
Well, it could be Fae. It could be some other form. You know, we know you don't want to take food or drink. You know, I have no idea. But whatever it is seemed to kill all the trees that they were in.
Yeah. Do you remember the movie The Fourth Kind?
Is that, yes. Yes, I do.
So
yes.
There was a bunch of alien abductions taking place in Nome, Alaska. And in the movie,
yeah,
it shows Nome, Alaska. It shows all these mountains and forests and stuff. And if you go on like Google Earth and look up Nome, Alaska, it's like a flat prairie. There ain't a tree.
There's nothing up
within
there.
Within 20 miles of there. There's no mountains near it or nothing.
Isn't that funny?
It's completely different. That's what I was thinking of when you were talking about Homer, Alaska, which is the halibut capital of the world, I think.
Homer is?
Mm-hmm.
All I could think about was Kodiak. And I'm like, oof, I know what's there.
You think of bears or you think of snuff?
Yeah, bears. Bears, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't there a brand called Kodiak?
I think there is, now that you say that. I think there is.
There definitely is grizzly.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean.
Yeah, I don't know.
Could there be. It can't be physical. Like, you can't have a crawler nest.
Why would they don't like trees?
Yeah, and what were they doing just around the house?
Go to the desert.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe there are some. They're just looking for people to drag off into the woods. Maybe. I have no idea what that could have possibly been. But I was hoping for Faye. Turns out it's crawlers.
Well, listen to this one. This one's going to hit home because you know exactly where this is. You've been here with your family. I've been there with you many times.
Oh, no.
Red River, New Mexico.
Oh, yeah. I was just there during Christmas. Oh,
that's right. Yeah, you were just up there.
Check this out.
My name is Emilio Sanchez, and I'm from Denver, Colorado. My family had a cabin in Red River, New Mexico. It's about a 7-hour drive from Denver. It was hidden deep in the woods and very secluded. When I was 11 years old, around 2011, my mother, my stepfather, and I were staying there for a few days as part of a family get-together. It was probably 6:30 or 7 in the morning. We had been inside the cabin playing cards, and my parents had gone down to the lake to catch fish for some breakfast. I was supposed to go with them, but I decided to stay behind. At some point, I heard what sounded like someone walking on the gravel driveway. I thought maybe my mother was coming back. There was a low fog or mist hanging close to the ground. So at first, I couldn't see anyone clearly. Then I saw it. It was standing about 50 yards away. The best way I can describe it is that it looked like a man with deer-like legs and a skull-like face.
Uh-oh.
It looked as if someone was wearing a hollowed-out deer skull over their head. I couldn't see any eyes. Where the eyes should have been, there was only black holes. Then it turns its head towards me. When we looked at each other, I knew instantly that it wasn't a person. I got scared and ducked below the windowsill. I heard footsteps hit the gravel driveway. Then three more times. The distance from the driveway to the cabin porch was about 50 feet, but it somehow covered that distance almost instantly. I don't know if it jumped, flew, or moved in some other way, but suddenly it was on a porch. Then it started walking up the stairs. It was only about 3 feet from the door when I heard my mother's voice. It said, "Let me in. Don't leave me out here."
Uh-oh.
But in my mother's voice. For a moment, I wondered if what I had seen was in my mind and if my mother was actually standing outside. But something was wrong. If it had been my mother, she wouldn't have kept asking for me to let her in. She just would have opened the door.
Yeah, instead, why does it need permission?
It's not like a vampire, right?
Dude.
Instead, the voice kept saying, "Open the door. I won't ask you again. Let me in."
Ooh.
Each time it spoke, the voice seemed to become deeper. It sounded like someone had recorded my mother's voice and played it backward. It kept demanding that I open the door. Then, almost instantly, it changed from trying to get me to open the door to kicking and pounding on it. I didn't open it.
Maybe it was her.
There was no way that was my mother.
She's bringing the groceries, bro. Her hands are full. She's got milk.
She's got fish.
Come on.
It kept yelling, "Let me in. Answer me. Open the door." It sounded like it was trying to break the door down. I remember being terrified and thinking, what happens if it gets inside? Then it suddenly stopped. The pounding stopped. The voice stopped. I heard heavy footsteps leaving the porch. When I finally looked back up, it was gone. When my parents returned from the lake, they said they hadn't seen or heard anything. They suggested it might have been an animal, maybe something feeding on a deer. But I knew that that wasn't what I saw. I asked them if there was anything in the world like that, and they told me no. For years, I questioned what I had seen and heard. The story would come up sometimes around campfires with friends, but I tried not to think about it too much. I didn't think I would ever see it again. Then around 2017, I was hiking in the backcountry in Montana. It was late May, early morning with crisp, clean air. I was hiking along the Madison Range, about 12,000 feet up. My plan was to hike from peak to peak. It was remote, and not many people knew that trail. At first, everything was normal. I could hear birds, wind, bugs, and crickets. Then everything got quiet. No birds, no bugs, nothing. I began to feel anxious, as if something was watching me. Then I saw someone standing off to the side. At first, I thought it might be some person playing a joke in the woods. But I knew it wasn't. I had seen deer, elk, moose, and other animals, and this was not anything like that. I saw the creature again. All I could see was its upper body and that old deer-like head. It looked exactly the same. It was just standing there watching me. That moment confirmed for me what I saw when I was 11 had been real. I stared at it. After a while, I looked away, and when I looked back, it was gone. I waited about 10 minutes to see if anything would reappear somewhere else or anything, but nothing happened. Eventually, I kept hiking, but I was afraid it was stalking me. That night, I had the first nightmare I'd had about the creature in a long time. In the dream, it was on top of me, and it had killed me.
Ooh.
After that, I started to feel as if it had somehow attached itself to me. I felt like it always lingering around nearby. A couple of months later, I met Kelsey. That's when things started getting more violent. Kelsey later described what happened after Emilio told her about the entity. "My name is Kelsey Covered." This is his girlfriend speaking. "I met Emilio through a friend of a friend, and we got along really well. One night he asked me if he had ever told me about his thing that he saw, and I didn't take it seriously at first. Emilio and I were close friends, and sometimes he would crash at my place because he lived farther away. One night, Emilio fell into a very deep sleep. I couldn't sleep, and I felt something on the bed like a cat had jumped up on it. I don't have a cat, so I thought maybe Emilio had moved his legs or something and it startled me. Later, I felt something touching my leg.
Ooh.
At first, I thought Emilio was doing it. I was like, Emilio!
I've seen your thing!
But he was deep asleep beside me. The sensation grew stronger, and then it felt like something was scratching my leg. I sat up, and it stopped. I tried to wake Emilio, but he wouldn't wake up. I was scared.
Emilio!
But I told myself I probably dreamed it. The next morning, I pulled the covers back and saw marks on my leg.
Uh-oh.
So whatever this is that attached itself to Emilio, I think is now messing with me. Thanks for all you do.
Might be time to trade Emilio in.
So was it like a deer man that he saw?
A Wendigo.
A Wendigo?
What it sounds like with the crazy skull head.
I don't know.
Man, that's... I don't like any of that. I don't like any of that at all.
What was the name of the movie that they kept saying Emilio? Night at the Roxbury? Is that what it is? Are you brothers? No.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It's like, I was like, Emilio.
Yeah.
Will Ferrell?
Yeah. Listen.
I don't know, though. This is exactly why I don't go on these haunted house tours and things like that. Because I don't want some kind of entity following me. I definitely don't want a Wendigo deer man thing.
Well, and look, not all entities are bad. Let me lay this one on you real quick.
Okay. It
says, in 1983, I lived in a house in Boulder with several roommates. We're back in Colorado, y'all. And one of them was an airline steward. And since he was away at times, I would walk his Great Pyrenees Golden Lab mix. I often took her on hikes in the foothills above Boulder. One weekend, I was planning a Saturday morning hike. On Friday, I gathered the things I intended to take with the dog and got my day pack ready for the outing. That Friday night, before sleep fully set in, I suddenly had a vision of a Native American man. He was wearing an orange shirt and had a painted face. He was hovering above the Bear Canyon Bear Peak trailhead. His hair was fanned out behind him in the wind. I couldn't see his lower body. It looked more like a thick wisp of smoke rising from the ground. Now, he told me that I was not going up that trail. If I persisted, I would meet with disaster. I sat bolt upright in bed, turned on the light, and felt very rattled. I got up and watched television with my roommates for a while, and eventually I went back to bed. But the vision occurred again. Once more, I was jarred by it. I wondered what was happening, and I knew it was completely out of the ordinary. So I lay awake for a few hours, unable to get it out of my mind. In the early morning hours, I finally calmed down enough to sleep. So the next day, the dog and I went up into the foothills. When I reached the trailhead, I felt as though an invisible wall was there. I simply could not override the warning and ascend that trail. Instead, we went along a different trail, and everything was fine. Now, a few years later, after I'd moved into a different part of Boulder, my neighbor told me about something that had happened to him one night in the early 80s. He said that he felt beckoned to that same trailhead, that he actually got into his car in the middle of the night, drove there, parked, and hiked up to the trailhead. At that time, Boulder was experiencing high winter winds, the Chinooks. So it was not exactly the best condition for a 2 a.m. stroll. Still, he felt compelled to go. Once John reached the trailhead, he felt extreme dread, as if something were lying in wait for him up on that trail.
Mountain lion, perhaps?
Maybe. Said he would start up the trail a few steps, then turn around and head away from it. He lingered at the trailhead for almost an hour before finally turning around and going home. He felt extremely confused by the experience. Because of other experiences I've had along the Flatirons in Boulder, I've come to believe that the spirits of Native Americans reside there. Some may be protective. I have no idea what may be up on that trail that was beckoning and sinister. Was it a Native spirit, or was it something else, possibly a djinn? I had hiked the trail before without incident, before this Native American spirit warned me away from it. Luckily, I was cautioned, and my neighbor had good gut instincts. We had both avoided whatever might be out there waiting for us, H.S. So, two different experiences, same type of, like, but the beckoning. It was like, is the evil calling to you to come out there at 2 in the morning? What kind of beckoning would get you up at 2 a.m., to just go out into the woods and walk around?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Just be like, I'm going to it. And like this, you had a dream, not once, but twice.
Or vision, if you will.
Vision. The same night, both times, about not going there. Good thing you heeded it.
Yeah, right.
What is that? Like, what is reaching out, knowing, like, how much time do you have to spend in the woods before the spirits start giving you some heads up? Because I need the heads up on where the big deer are hiding.
No doubt.
Where everything's moving, when the best time to hunt them is. That's what I need, a heads up. Speaking of heads up, here's a heads up. We're going to pay some bills. We're going to come back from the break. We've got a few more creepy, unsettling stories for y'all folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Everybody's talking about weight loss injections because the results are so dramatic. They work by lowering blood sugar or inducing appetite. So what if you're looking to lose weight, but you're not interested in painful weekly injections, especially when you hear about some of those intense side effects? That's why doctors created a weight loss supplement called Lean. And for anybody, before anybody asks, not that Lean. No styrofoam cups, no purple syrup, no SoundCloud rap career required. This Lean was created to help support healthy weight loss, and the results are remarkable. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help lower blood sugar, burn fat by converting it into energy, and curb your appetite and cravings so you're not as hungry. But listen, Lean is not for the casual dieter with only a few pounds to lose. The doctors at Brickhouse Nutrition created Lean for frustrated dieters with 10 or more pounds they need to lose.
Here is even better news than all that, y'all. They are having a huge Memorial Day sale, and Lean is now 25% off. So visit takelean.com and enter thank you 25. It's that simple, y'all. Thank you 25 for 25% off. So go to visit Lean, or just visit Lean rather. Go to takelean.com. Enter the promo code thank you 25 for your 25% off.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Less chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
And we are back.
Yeah, I got one here. From this takes place in West Texas.
Oh, hey, now, wait, where at? How far out west?
Come on
now, lay it on me.
I'm not sure. Maybe we'll find
out.
This is a police officer.
Oh, all right, perfect.
So, let's do this. We always talk about trained observers, right?
Yeah, I love it.
As a cop, I spend a lot of time dealing with things that scare people, things they can't explain, or things they don't want to try to explain. I am usually the one who gets the call to go out and check on whatever goes bump in the night. Add in the fact that I usually work alone, in the middle of nowhere. And I have run across and seen some things I can't rightly explain. This was probably the first time in my career that I had been in what I would call a supernatural situation. It happened before in life, but as far as police work went, this was starting point of what turned out to be a very interesting career. One night, near the end of July, I was cruising back county roads, trying to find some kind of trouble to get into. I was the only deputy out in the county that night. I had been busy for a while, but the calls had slacked off around midnight. I hadn't seen a single soul for the last few hours, so I decided I would try to be proactive. The night was hot, and I had the window rolled down. I'd been driving for a few hours with no luck finding anything. The only things I had scared up were a few rabbits and a fox. I decided to stop, stretch my legs, and answer nature's calling. I pulled to a stop in a particularly empty part of the county. I had driven that road a few times before. It was mostly old, abandoned farmhouses and barns. No one lived in that area, making it a good target for thieves looking to steal copper or whatever else they could get their hands on. The left side of the road was nothing but cornfields, as far as you could see. It was getting close to harvest time. The stalks were close to 7 or 8 feet tall, just a sea of green. On the right side of the truck was an old abandoned apple orchard. I never did get the full story of how the land came to be abandoned. It had something to do with multiple mistresses, multiple wills, illegitimate children, and other nonsense. The result was about 150 acres of fruit trees that had become their own little forest over the 20 or so years it had been unattended. I was sitting there in the truck with my head laid back, just enjoying my little break. I had closed my eyes for a few seconds, and when I opened them, I looked out into the cornfield and made direct eye contact with something. At first, I thought it was a person, and it almost gave me a heart attack right there. The thing stood about 7 feet tall. Its eyes were human, but they shone in the night like an animal's eyes. I'm not a weak man. I've done more stupid and foolish things in my lifetime than I can care to remember. I've been afraid before, and now I'm not above admitting it. But there was something about those eyes that absolutely terrified me. So I did what any normal and sane 22-year-old dumb kid would do. I chased it. I kept eye contact with the thing. I slowly rolled up my window and checked out with dispatch over the radio. Then I grabbed my patrol rifle off its mount above me. I remember taking a deep breath, throwing the door open and jumping out of the truck while yelling, "Sheriff's Office!" in the most authoritative voice I could muster. I maintained eye contact the entire time, except for the instant my vision crossed the driver's side A-pillar. As soon as my boots touched the dirt road, the creature was gone. I caught nothing but a blur as a black and brown shape vaulted across the road and ran into the trees. Sorry about that, folks. Somebody's calling me. Once again, my sense of self-invincibility got the better of me. I kicked the door closed on the truck and took off after it, yelling for it to stop. I stumbled into the orchard and was hit with the most overpowering odor I've ever smelt. It was a combination of an unwashed person, body odor, and animal musk. I still remember the smell vividly all these years later. I've been around rotting bodies, and that didn't impact me as much as this smell did. I've never been a particularly fast runner, I've never cared much for it, and I've always been more of a short burst kind of guy. Whatever I was chasing was fast, though. It didn't dawn on me until much later that it may have been playing with me, leading me farther into the little forest. I would catch a black blur moving in the distance. I would hear a bunch of branches breaking or the sound of it off to one side. I stumbled around like this for a good 15 minutes before my bravado and adrenaline had wore off. That's when I decided to head back to the truck because I was alone and scared. The whole way back, I had that itch between my shoulder blades like I was being watched, like I was the intruder in someone else's domain. I made it out of the trees and back to the truck. It was in the same place I had left it, but the driver's side door was open. The dome light was on. The vehicle was turned off, with the key still in the ignition. I knew I hadn't locked the door, but also knew that I hadn't left it running. I didn't often turn it off during my shift. I checked the truck to make sure it was empty. The same smell filled the cab. It was in the seats and the carpet, like something had sat in my seat and wallowed around. I started the truck and got the heck out of there as fast as I could. I didn't tell anyone about the encounter. I just told dispatch I thought I had seen something, that it turned out to be nothing, and I left it at that. Around a year later, during one of the few times I rotated to days and had a partner to work with, I was driving around the opposite side of the county. I just cleared a cattle call, playing cowboy and pushing some steers back against a fence, when my partner called me to ask where I was. He was scared. I could tell. I could hear it in his voice. I told him where I was, and he asked if I could meet him down in the southwest part of the county. There was an old gin down there. It just happened to be in the same general area as my encounter from about a year earlier. I never told him about what had happened to me, but I agreed to meet with him. The story I got from him was that he had pulled into the same cornfield from a year earlier, not too far from where my encounter took place. He had backed into it, down a turn row, used it to maintain a pivot. He decided to stop there and get a few minutes of rest. It was a Sunday morning, and like most of our Sundays, nothing would really happen until after lunch, when people started getting active. My partner had dozed off for a few minutes and was awakened by his truck violently shaking back and forth, with a dust cloud dissipating around him. At first, he thought it was me messing with him. When he got out to check, he told me he smelled a nasty animal odor. Not finding anything else out of the ordinary, he got back into his truck and drove away. He drove down to the gin, got out, and walked around the place to make sure no one was there. When he went back to get into the truck, he noticed a handprint on his window. Anyone who has ever driven a truck down a dirt road will tell you that handprints on vehicles will fill with dust and stand out. He saw the print. He freaked out and called me. Right over his head, on top part of the door of the cab of the truck, was the biggest handprint I've ever seen in my life. I have average-sized hands for my size. This print was easily bigger than two of my hands. I told him my story. He described the smell almost exactly the same way I did. Neither of us ever found out what was living down there. I heard a few more stories over my time there. I even ran across one guy who was convinced it was a West Texas version of Bigfoot. I would answer a few suspicion person calls around that area over the next few years. I always kept an eye out, but I never had another encounter like I did that night. Wow.
Yikes.
So two people in the same exact area.
Officers.
Both officers, both described the same smell. They both, one of them saw it, physically saw it, chased it around. Another one had a,
dude,
the handprint was left on the vehicle. You see, if you watch a lot of like On Patrol, which I know you do, you'll notice like when a state trooper or a cop pulls somebody over, one of the first things they'll do is they'll touch the car.
Mm-hmm.
They put their handprint on there. So in case the car gets away, they can find the cop's handprint on that car. So you can't say, well, it was a different white Toyota Camry.
If he's killed in the line of duty.
Yeah, no, that's the car. So I thought about that when that Bigfoot put its hand on there, it's marking its territory. And then the other one, he said they got in the cab.
Yeah, I like the idea of it getting in the cab of the truck.
It's like, man, what mark? You need a bath, bro.
Man.
What are you doing?
You need to lay off those street tacos, bro. Like, what are you doing in here?
Crazy.
Dude, the idea of a possible Sasquatch behind the wheel.
Well, and you hear and you think of West Texas. It's like, why would it be there? But then you hear these cases of it in the desert.
Yeah. I mean, it always makes you.
It appears in impossible areas.
It's because it's like it's interdimensional. It can just go where it feels like going.
Well, that's what I think about.
Yeah.
I think about the portals and stuff.
It kind of has to be in order for that to happen. You brought up Red River. I've got another place that we've been to together. And I think it's a fun town. I enjoy it. It says this. This is where it starts off. To finish out my last year of high school, I had to attend a school located about 10 to 15 miles from the nearest town near Durango, Colorado.
Oh, yeah.
During the 2017 to 2018 school year, I was at a boarding school and I lived there with around 30 other students and teachers. When I first arrived, I had never heard the term skinwalker until one of my classmates brought it up. Well, of course, I got curious and had to look it up online. And what I found made it sound like some kind of joke. Just a magical, transforming creature. So people around campus would say, "Watch out for the skinwalkers," and laugh about it. Nobody really took it seriously. The campus itself was huge. It was probably 20 to 30 acres, and it sat right next to a river. About 2 weeks after I got there, I was walking the grounds and I noticed what I was told was an Indian burial ground, only about 75 foot from my cabin. There were around 20 cabins on the property, and each one only housed two people. So one night, my roommate and I, we were up around midnight playing Call of Duty when we suddenly heard someone or something that sounded like a very large animal sprinting full tilt into the back of our cabin. It happened more than once. We were terrified. The school didn't allow guns, so all we could do was double lock our door and close the shades. Even the night security guard came by because he thought that we were the ones outside making the noise. He told us that he had been convinced we were roaming around the grounds until he saw how pale and shaken we both were. After that, he at least partially believed something had happened. Then the weird stuff kept coming. About once or twice a week for around 2 months, we heard random scratches on the window, saw clusters of lights out in the field, and listened to the screams and whistles in the dark. people in nearby cabins talked about similar experiences. Then one native student told us that speaking about skinwalkers attracts them. After that, people stopped talking so openly. It got bad enough that I finally asked to meet with the principal and brought it up on behalf of everyone. What he told me made things worse. He said that back in 2010, he had been working late one night when he saw someone sprint into the cafeteria, ripping papers off the walls as it went by. He had assumed it was a student and chased it inside. The cafeteria had only one way in and one way out. But when he turned on the lights, there was nobody there. My roommate eventually dropped out halfway through the year because of everything going on, and I could not find anyone else to stay in that cabin with me. I was left there alone, listening to the same kind of activity for months. I got close to dropping out myself, but I was too close to finishing my senior year. Around three quarters of the way through the year, the school took one of its quarterly trips, during which students went on a week-long hiking excursion somewhere in the county. In the country. There were five different groups, and mine went to Humphreys Peak in Arizona. We camped on the way back to Colorado. The first night was fine. And for the first time in weeks, I was not thinking about anything that had been happening at the school. The next day, we spent most of our time driving and hiking to the next camp area, a random place deep in the desert, about 5 or 6 miles down a trail. After we had set up our hammocks and started relaxing, an older woman in a bikini appeared from behind a hill. The sight of her was immediately unsettling. We were miles into the trail, and she had no water bottle, no backpack, nothing. She started talking to one of my teachers and told him she knew the area well and could show him around, and they walked off together. What really stayed with me was the way that she moved. I still can't explain it. It looked like both knees were broken, but she was still walking, not limping exactly, but moving in a way that looked terribly wrong. A few minutes later, my teacher came back alone and walked past everyone without saying a word, going straight into his tent. I tried not to think about it much, but I could not get that woman's walk out of my head. On the third day, we reached Tucker Flat, Arizona. After another long drive and hike, we ended up camping on a giant rock in the middle of nowhere. That night, we built a fire, made food, and went to bed. I never really slept. I spent most of the night staring at the top of the tent, still thinking about the woman the day before. At around 10 or 11 that night, we started hearing noises outside. First, it sounded like rustling, and then footsteps, then rustling again. My tent mate and I could hear it getting closer and closer. I whispered, "Do you hear that?" and looked over at him. He was staring at me wide-eyed with his knife already in hand, so I grabbed mine too. Then the footsteps stopped. I felt a second of relief and figured out it was the best moment to unzip the tent and look outside. When I opened my side, I was face to face with a pair of eyes less than a foot away. It was a black cat in the dead middle of the desert. When my tent mate saw it, his jaw dropped. We were miles down a hiking trail, far from anything, and there was it around here at 11 at night. We couldn't make sense of it. We decided the safest thing to do was walk all the way back to the trailhead and sleep in the van. So that is exactly what we did. We hiked the entire 5 or 6 miles back in the dark. The whole time we kept hearing rustling behind us. Whenever we'd flash the light, we'd saw a pair of eyes watching us from a distance. Later, I started reading more about skinwalkers, and a chill went through me. I came across claims that they sometimes take the form of small animals, including dogs or cats, to get close to the people that they're targeting. That school was by far the weirdest place that I've ever had to live. I thank God all the time that I no longer live there. And this was only one of the experiences I had there. Things got worse as the year went on. From everything I've lived through, my advice is simple. Don't say a word, Greg.
Wow.
So, they may have been found by a... I can't say it's complete anomaly. I mean, I've been at the deer lease before, and we're not way far from houses, but we're a pretty good ways out. Right. and you'll see a house cat come by, and you're like, well, okay, guess he's just living his best
life.
Maybe
it wasn't a house cat, though.
That's exactly right. Then you start thinking, like, well, maybe it wasn't. But to be out in the middle of that area, just to have a black cat show up in the middle of the night, come into the tent, it always makes me think of one of two things. Either it is out there just living its best life, and there's somebody living maybe not far from there, or maybe someone lost it. Maybe they were out there hiking with the cat, and it's trying to find tents. It knows people. It's coming to people for help. But the fact that they left, and then this thing kept following them, and I don't know if it was the black cat or not.
Well, you hear these stories of people, they're moving from California to, say, Virginia, and they leave their cat. And then the cat shows up at their house like a month later. Like the thing literally walked across the country.
Yes.
Maybe that black cat was walking
halfway
across
through
country.
Its mission. Yeah. Halfway through its mission. Or maybe it was hoping that it would take you home. Right? Like it's, think of this. Right. What if you have the stain on you from the interactions with these skinwalkers and this thing can sense it? And it knows if it comes to you and you give in and you bring it back, you're just bringing to give it more power. You're taking it to a darker place.
Now, let me ask you this. When it comes to skinwalkers, doesn't it always seem like it's in that part of the country? Like,
yes.
It's always like Arizona, Colorado, Nevada.
Yeah.
Utah, you don't ever hear about it like in New Hampshire. I've never heard of a skinwalker story.
Yeah, it always feels like
Florida,
around Native American stuff is what it always feels like it's around.
Yeah, Oklahoma's another one. It's a lot. Makes you wonder.
Yeah.
I got a crazy one, speaking of stuff like that.
Oh, here we go.
My grandfather was a real nonsense kind of guy. He was born in Alberta, Canada, during the early 1930s and was raised on a reservation with his three brothers. When he was only 9 years old, his parents left for British Columbia with their only daughter. They promised that they would return, but none of the boys ever saw them again. To survive, my grandfather learned carpentry, worked as a laborer, and a bare-knuckle boxer for older men to make extra money. He learned how to track and to hunt, and when the work was scarce, he still came home with something to eat. When he was 14, he put the second oldest brother in charge of the household. He left the reservation and went in search of his parents and a better way of life. He never went back. That was the last time he saw any of his family members. He spent months riding the rails, befriending some transients, and using his fighting skills to defend himself against others. Eventually, he made his way to Vancouver, the last known whereabouts of his parents and sister, and began working in a pulp mill. At 17, he met my grandmother, and they eventually got married, and he gave up his search for his missing family. They bought some land, and in his free time, my grandfather built several houses. Some of those houses still stand today. One of them was on the land he bought with my grandmother. The property included acres of wooded land, and they kept horses and small farm animals for eggs and meat. My aunt was born in the early 1950s, and my mother came along near the end of that decade. As far as I know, nothing bad or strange happened until my mother found an old Ouija board and played with it alone. I did not know whether that had anything to do with what happened later. When my mother was around 8 years old, she was riding her horse through the wooded part of the acreage. Suddenly, her horse stopped, dead in its tracks. My mother tried to spur it forward, but the animal was frozen in fear. Then she smelled something like rotting garbage and meat. She pulled back on the reins, and the horse instantly turned and bolted back towards the house. It almost threw her several times along the way. After that horse was never the same. It would try to kick her. If she managed to get on it, the horse would fall backward, trying to crush her beneath it. One day, the horse started acting like its old self again and allowed her to climb on. But once she was mounted, it ran towards the road, stopped abruptly, and bucked her forward into the path of an oncoming car. My grandfather saw that happen. He put a shotgun to that horse's head, but the animal just stood there breathing heavily and staring straight ahead. My mother was nearly hit by the car, but the driver swerved just in time. My grandfather begged my grandfather not to shoot the horse. When he saw that my mother was not badly injured, he decided to give the animal away instead. That same horse later fell on the next person who rode it and broke her collarbone. That rider's father did what my grandfather said he should have done the first time. After that, animals began disappearing from the property. One of the hunting dogs was injured by something during a nighttime attack. My grandfather set traps and began sleeping in the hayloft above the barn with a shotgun and a rifle beside him. He stayed out there for several nights. He thought it might be foxes, could be coyotes or wolves, or even a desperate bear. He also believed a bear could explain the smell my mother noticed in the woods and why the horse had gone mad with fear. But nothing came while he was watching. Kind of like when you're hunting, right? Eventually,
all the time,
he assumed whatever it was had probably moved on for easier prey, or it had died. The day after he stopped sleeping in the barn, my mother was outside near the tree line playing with her injured dog as it healed. Out of nowhere, the dog began sniffing the air. Then it moved between my mother and the trees, growling and barking. My grandfather, of course, heard the commotion and came outside. He stopped in his tracks and called back to my grandmother to bring him his rifle. Then he whistled for the dogs. My grandmother came out, handed him the gun, and asked him, "What's going on?" As the dogs began reacting like the first one, my grandfather pointed toward one of the treetops. At first, it looked like the top of the tree was longer and thicker than the others around it, but then it moved slightly. He later told me that this thing was 6 feet tall, or maybe taller. He took aim and fired just as he saw a pair of wings begin to open. Whatever was up there had been watching him. But he beat it to the punch. He said it was a kill shot, directly in the chest with his high-powered rifle. The thing dropped. He immediately ran toward the impact site with the dogs following him. He said the sound of the branches breaking as the thing fell was unmistakable. When he reached the spot, he raised the rifle again and ordered the dogs to forward to flush whatever it was out. But the dogs just stood there, spinning around, trying to catch a scent that had somehow vanished. There was a pile of broken branches where the thing had landed, but there was no body, no blood, no trail. It had either disappeared or somehow gone straight back up the way it came. My grandfather searched for those woods for several days, but he never found the sign of what it was. After that, the family did not see it again, and the trouble with the animals stopped. Decades later, when my grandfather was dying, he kept talking about something he had seen. In his delirium, he called it an alien and said it was coming back for him. I'd never seen that man scared of anything in my entire life, but there was some real panic in his voice. A few nights before he died, he had already been too weak to stand on his own for several days. My grandmother woke to the sound of a gunshot. She ran outside, fearing the worst, and saw my grandfather lowering his rifle and staring into the distance. She took the gun from him and helped him back inside, and that was it. I don't know whatever he saw had really come back for him or not, or if it was just a hallucination of an old memory. But I like to think he went out with one final act of defiance against that thing that had tormented his family all those years before. Sean.
He was fighting Jeepers Creepers for the family.
Yeah. It unfurled its wings. It was up there watching. The Mothman or whatever it is. These flying humanoids.
And then he spent years in battle with that thing.
Yeah.
How wild.
Up there in the British Columbian woods. I've been up there before, but I never saw nothing like that.
Talk about a rough start to life. Your folks leave with your little sister, and they're like, "We'll be back to get you boys later." And that was that.
Yeah, you know, that kind of thing happened a lot more often than you think back in the day.
Yeah.
We talk about that now. Like, you could just change your name and move to the next county, and nobody knew who you were or what.
And just, and especially up there, you just left your kids and just rolled out.
Yeah.
I mean,
no child protective services.
We've
all
thought about it, but never done it. All right. Here. I've got you one more here that I think you're going to like this. It says, "I am a 62-year-old man, and I've seen a lot of things in my life. My mother and my grandmother were Cree. And when I was young, my mother told me a story from her grandmother about the Wendigo and how it related to our people. She would always warn me to beware of the Wendigo. When I came of age, I joined the Canadian Armed Forces. My parents drove me to the gate as I was about to walk into my new life. And my mother said, 'I'm proud of you, my son, and I'm sure you will do well. Just be careful when you are out in the wild to watch for the Wendigo.' Well, after basic training, I was sent on a tradesman's course and then to my first posting. I was assigned to the Special Service Force in Petawawa, Ontario." There's no way I got that right. As a communication specialist, my job involved fixing telecommunication equipment, and I held a top secret security clearance. We trained hard there, and I was prepared to face whatever enemy I might encounter during my missions. One December, we were transported by helicopter to a mountaintop close to Algonquin Provincial Park for a week of winter warfare training. During that week, each of us had to take a turn on night guard duty. So one night at around 2 a.m., I began hearing strange voices coming from down the mountain. The temperature was around minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit. At first, I checked to make sure everyone was asleep in their tents. Everyone was accounted for. I scanned the area with my military-issued flashlight, trying to locate whoever might be out there, and I couldn't see anyone. The voices continued for a while, and I called out, "Hello, who goes there?" "You are on a Canadian Armed Forces base. Identify yourself." There was no answer. I kept listening. The voices sounded Asian to me. Some seemed to come from the right, others from the left, almost as if several people were having a conversation. Since this was only a training exercise, we had no ammunition for our weapon. So, not knowing what to expect, I did the next best thing. I fixed my bayonet and continued walking around the camp. After a while, the voices stopped. Now, I remember wondering who in their right mind would hike at least 20 miles into the wilderness into that kind of miserable weather just to pull a prank on us. That week, the base was shut down twice because of the extreme cold. Now, of course, we remained on the mountaintop. That was all part of the training. When my replacement arrived, the first thing he asked was why I had the bayonet fixed to my weapon. I didn't want to tell him I had been hearing voices down below him, so I told him it was so cold that I had been doing drill movements to keep warm, and I don't know if he really believed me. The next month, there was a major military exercise in Wainwright, Alberta. The entire brigade was there. One day, my partner and I were sent out on a call to repair a piece of equipment that was somewhere in the middle of nowhere. We'd been driving around for about 45 minutes through the deep snow and still couldn't locate it. I was driving, so I stopped to check our location and try to find the equipment. My partner was studying a topographical map while I looked around for a reference point. To our right was a forested area with pine trees and underbrush. To our left was an open field. About 100 feet from the tree line at my 10 o'clock position, there was a large white-tailed buck foraging in the snow. The deer was facing us and looking in our direction. Then, out of nowhere, a huge creature blasted out of the tree line and went straight for the deer. It moved so fast that it covered the distance between the trees and the deer in less time than it took me to tell my partner to look. The creature grabbed the deer by its head. It was about 2 feet taller than the deer. It was reddish brown with very wide shoulders. The head was pointed and seemed to sit directly on the shoulders. There was no visible neck. Its arms were long and heavily muscled. Its legs looked like 55-gallon drums, and the entire body was covered with long hair. I wished I'd had more time to observe it and take in more details, but everything happened so fast. As soon as the creature reached the deer, it put one hand on top of the deer's head and the other on the back of its neck. Then it twisted the deer's neck like it was a rag. Without even stopping, it headed back into the woods with the deer over its shoulder. I put the truck in gear and said, "Let's get out of here!"
Right.
My partner eventually found the trail leading to our destination, and we located the equipment. When we returned to the bivouac area, my sergeant asked if everything had gone okay. I told him I didn't know what I had seen on the way to the other location, but it was pretty freaky. He looked at me and said he didn't want to hear about it, so I kept it to myself and walked away. As time went on and as I grew older, I realized that I had witnessed a Sasquatch harvest that deer. I had a good career in the Army. I served on several United Nations peacekeeping missions around the world. I saw strange animals and witnessed many unusual situations. But that beast in Alberta is the one thing I will never forget. HJ. So, this dude in the Canadian military witnessed, just cruising around in the middle of nowhere,
right,
a Sasquatch. Those kind of stories, I kind of believe. Like, I'm kind of like, yeah, it makes sense. You're up in the middle of that, in those mountains, in the middle of nowhere, in the cold, just kicking around, and stumble across a Bigfoot trying to eat.
To me, I don't know what it is, but I believe that story. I can see that happening more than the one in West Texas, you know?
It makes
sense. I can't explain what the cops saw either.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That's what makes Bigfoot so strange. I mean,
yeah.
I've seen more and more people adopt my idea of Bigfoot, meaning that you ask me on Tuesday, I believe it's fake. You ask me on Thursday, I think it's real. I see more and more people doing that because, I don't know, some days I'm like, there's no way. And then other days I'm like, dude, there is a way. And then the strange Asian-like sounds. That reminds me of like the Ron Moorhead
recordings. The Sierra sounds or whatnot.
The Samurai.
Yeah,
the Sierra sounds.
Yeah.
Al Berry and Ron Moorhead. We met Ron Moorhead.
Yeah.
I don't remember which conference it was, but.
It is.
You know, it sounds like Japanese or samurai.
Yeah,
it
sounds like samurai talk.
Yeah, so that's what he was hearing there.
Yeah, that's the first thing you think of. And it's from both sides. So were they planning on coming in? Were they just sitting there keeping an eye on you? Yeah.
Or maybe
because I often wonder if they just keep an eye on you. Like if that group's out there and they, you know, they're way out there and they're like, well, this isn't normal. And they spot them, they move in and then they just sit there because they want to know, you know what I mean? That they're watching and waiting. They want to plan ahead in case whatever these pink monkeys are doing, if they're going to try to move closer in, if they're going to go deeper, or if they're just hanging out.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
There's no telling. Let's take a break. And when we get back from the break, I got another story from Canada I think you're going to like. Today's episode is brought to you by the fine folks over at IQ Bar, our exclusive snack.
We have a snack sponsor.
Hydration and coffee sponsor.
We have it.
Now listen, when you're 3 hours deep into a rabbit hole about underground reptilian civilizations, or somebody sends you a blurry photo of a satyr standing beside a Dollar General, you need fuel for both the brain and the body, and that's where IQ Bar comes in.
Big facts.
IQ Bar protein bars, IQ Mix hydration mixes, and IQ Joe mushroom coffees are low sugar, delicious brain fuel designed to keep you sharp, hydrated, or at least moderately functional while questioning reality itself. And if you're new to IQ Bar, the ultimate sampler pack is the perfect way for you to dive into the madness. You get 9 IQ bars, 8 IQ Mix hydration sticks, and 4 IQ Joe coffee sticks. Basically, it's a survival kit for modern humans and amateur monster hunters alike. Now, many of you know many of my nicknames. One of them is Big Fizzy, mostly because I drink enough sparkling water to power a small submarine. But these IQ Mix hydration packets, they're amazing. They're my go-to. They're zero sugar, they're packed with electrolytes, and they help boost clarity and mood, and they honestly make plain water taste less like sadness. And the flavors, they're fantastic. You've got things like mint chocolate chip protein bars, blueberry pomegranate hydration mixes, vanilla spice mushroom coffee, plus kinds of seasonal and limited edition flavors floating around out there like some mysterious snack pack based UFO sighting. With over 20,000 five-star reviews, clearly we're not the only weirdos fueling our lives with this stuff. Cam uses it. He likes it. His wife likes it. So if you want better snacks, better hydration, better coffee, and possibly enough mental clarity to survive this episode, then check out IQ Bar today.
My granddaughter loves it. I've got her hooked on the mint chocolate chip. She enjoys that stuff too. Folks, right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners, that's y'all, 20% off of all of the IQ Bar products, including the sampler pack. Plus, that's right, plus free shipping. Like it wasn't good enough. So to get your 20% off, just text EXPANDED to 64,000. EXPANDED to 64,000. It's that simple, folks. Just text EXPANDED to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the Claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
we're back with Expanded Perspectives. I've got another one, Cam.
Lay it on me.
I think you're going to like. Listen to this. I had planned a three-day camping trip up in the coming spring in the wilds of the rural municipality of Canwood, Saskatchewan, Canada. We've been planning this trip since Christmas.
Hold on. Why you got to say it like that? You're just trying to aggravate the Canadian listeners. Saskatchewan. Like, there's only there's not that many syllables in that word.
Makes me sound educated.
Saskatchewan.
It's like France or France, right? We had been planning this trip since Christmas. We assumed the snow would be completely gone by then, but the trail was still very slushy and cold. Because of that, the original three-night trip was cut down to only two. So we saddled up our horses and headed out. The first sign that this trip was not going to be pleasant came from the horses. My old white gelding, who had always been reliable, was acting completely unlike himself. He had never been aggressive, but the moment we got onto the trail, he was wailing, bucking, and trying to bite. My friend's horse, who was usually the energetic one, stayed completely silent and kept her head down the whole way to our first stop. When the sun was started to settle and settle down, we found a patch of trees and made a pen using an electrified cord connected to a battery. Once I unsaddled my horse and put him in the enclosure, he calmed down and began grazing beside the other horse. While I tended to the horses, my friend set up the tent. He noticed that my bedroll was gone, along with my hat. That made no sense, because I had tied them to my saddle earlier. I looked around but could not find them near the camp. Then I went back down to my saddle and noticed that the leather cord I'd used to tie the items down with had been crudely sewn in half, or sawn in half. So something sawed through. He lost his bedroll. At first, I thought it must have snapped somewhere along this trail. I walked up from the very small valley we had stopped and looked around at. I found my hat about 80 feet from the trail that we had followed in on. I thought maybe it had blown away while I was riding, until I picked it up. It stank terribly. It smelled like a mixture of burnt hair and rotten milk. I held it as far away from me as I could and went back to camp. When I got there, my friend told me that he had gone to chop some wood. And when he had returned, the boots he had left outside of the tent have been moved. They stank too, with the same awful smell. By this point, we assumed there must be a skunk around. My friend pointed out that it did not smell like a skunk, and he was right. It was far more putrid. It was so bad that we resorted to piling snow over the items just to block the smell.
Whoa.
My friend started getting nervous and wondered if there might be an infected wolf out here. I laughed because I knew the area well and there were no wolves around. There were too many farmers with shotguns. Besides, no animal other than a skunk would stink things up that thoroughly. I thought it might be a small, sick animal marking its territory. I'd seen coyotes do similar things before, but coyotes would never come that close to humans or strange objects. We finally dismissed it as harmless and went to bed. The next morning, when we saddled the horses, we noticed that my friend's mare was covered in leaves. The leaves were stuck to her skin with what looked like tree sap. She became very angry when we peeled them off, and even tried to bite me, as if she were protecting them. We looked around but could not find any leaking sap, and my horse was still clean. That was when my friend brought up the wooded creature, or creatures, or spirits, and said that they are known to do things like that. I do not believe in such things, but the way this horse seemed to protect the leaves and the way she licked at the sap made me wonder. It would have been nice if it had been a good omen, because my stinking hat certainly was not. My poor friend also had to wear those boots. Yuck. We rode on and set up another camp the next night. At first, everything seemed normal. The horses were calm, the wind had settled, and the stretch had almost gone from our... And the stench, I'm sorry, had almost gone from our belongings. Then about 3 a.m., I got up to relieve myself. Before I even turned behind the tree, I smelled the same rancid odor again. That was when I became truly nervous. Whatever had caused that smell, yeah, it had followed us. I was afraid it might not be a cougar or something like that. It wandered too far south because of the long winter. I went back and grabbed a small hunting rifle that we had brought along. I told my friend where I was going. I went around a tree, finished my business, then stood back up and looked around with the gun at my hip. a shadow moved slowly behind a tree about 40 or 50 feet away. I hummed low, hoping I could hear it move or breathe so I could figure out what it was. The thing perfectly echoed my melody, but in a guttural sound. That was when I knew it definitely was not a cougar. My heart started pounding because I realized that nothing could do that except for a person. I yelled, "Who's there?" Then the rotting odor came back. It was so strong that I started to heave. My friend was calling out from the tent. I kept my eyes on the tree where the thing was standing and called out again, covering my nose this time. The leaves crunched, and then it hummed again. I started to cry, and I backed up towards the tent. The horses were making low, rumbling nickers, which made me even more uncomfortable because horses usually only do that when they are happy, and I certainly was not. My friend ran to my side just in time for me to keel over and vomit. He was almost sick, too.
What?
But he pointed the flashlight around and yelled into the trees. The thing, well, it ran when he heard the leaves crunching behind it. I kid you not, what I saw looked like a man, but with an animal's head. It was very dark, so I might be wrong, but dear God, I know what I saw. It looked like a satyr from Greek mythology. It was about the height of a man. Its legs looked like those of a horse or a goat. Its limbs were skinny, and it was hairy, especially around the head, BC. So these people up in Saskatchewan saw a satyr.
That could explain why the horse was cool with it.
You're right.
Because they have some sort of fey magic.
Well, and horses get along with goats.
Yeah.
Lots of times people will put pygmy goats along racing horses and stuff.
Put it in with the cutting horses. Yeah, they just hang out.
I remember, I mean, my mom's horse, Freckles, it loved Poncho. Remember the goat?
It was the only one that loved Poncho.
Yeah.
Freckles and your brother was the only ones that loved that goat.
Yeah, it would stand on the horse's back. I mean,
that goat was the spawn of the devil himself.
Yeah, right.
It was the bane of your father's yard existence. Dude.
Poncho.
We need to find pictures of Poncho, and we need to get it put on a shirt for your dad to wear.
Yeah, we could do that easily.
He'd be so mad.
We know some guys that own a t-shirt.
We just so happen to know some guy, Sunday Cool, if y'all are asking about t-shirts. That's a place you need to go check out.
Yeah. Yeah, wild story, man. I don't know. I love the satyr stories.
You do.
They're
few and far between. We don't get a lot of them. They trickle in. Like, that may be some of the fewest stories that we've ever gotten is satyr sightings.
Yeah.
But when you get them, it's always like this. Like, we don't get satyrs in town. We don't get, it's always like in the woods when you least expect it. You're like, what is that goat dude doing out here?
Well, and the story, it checks out. What I mean is, goats are nasty. They urinate on themselves and stuff. They are smelly creatures. Yeah.
I like the ones that just scream, big boar goats yelling.
Like, you've killed owl, Dad. How bad do those things stink?
Yeah, they're kind of smelly. All goats are kind of smelly.
Yeah, so even the goat man still stinks, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you have any cool satyr stories or anything else you'd like to share with the show, do not hesitate. You can email the show, expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the hotline, 888-393-2783. That's 888-393-BRUD.
That's right.
I did get some emails from people this week requesting signed copies of the book. Again, attention, Big Fizzy. That's what you need to put in the subject
line. Slap it on there.
Tell me if you want a signed copy of the book, of the new Glimmer Man book, and we'll get it to you. I've already shipped out several this week.
We got them in. We got more going out. Yeah,
Cam's
this week.
Getting carpal tunnel signing all these things, right?
Man, it's crazy. This is crazy.
All we need is the address and payment, man.
Hey, we love you guys. Thanks for even wanting the books.
Venmo,
much less wanting us to sign it.
PayPal.
Now, we're not the best with signatures. Like, we need to get better and all that stuff. We don't write anything in there, you know, and like, hey, you know, keep your eyes on the road. There's none of that. It's just us signing because our handwriting is awful.
Well, how often do you handwrite anymore? Right?
I should do it more. I really, because I love to watch like calligraphy videos I love that. But man, and you know what's funny? That's the easiest thing to practice.
Yeah.
You want to get good at it. That's the easiest thing to do. Just like when you get a kid, right? Just pick a word and just start writing that word over and over and over and just work through it. But we never seem to do it.
Nobody
practices their handwriting.
Yeah,
we should.
Right?
We really should.
But you got any big plans for Memorial Day weekend?
No. Other than seeing you, no.
Yeah, me either. We're not doing anything. We don't really do anything. We went to the Texas Fright Fest. I'm done for the weekend.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's quite a bit. That's quite a bit right there. That's quite a bit of the whole deal. No, the kids are out at the river. We'll probably see my granddaughter sometime, this whole deal. But she's been with us. You know, she's been staying with me all last week since she got out of school. So we had a good time, and I'm sure I get to see her again. But no, we don't really have any plans of anything. I should. I'm hoping. My daughter's in town for 3 days before she has to go back.
Where's she going this time?
Let's see. She goes back to New Hampshire, and then she'll be back here for a little bit. And then I think she's got to go to Houston, then back to Nashville, and then... I don't know, man. She's always... All I know is at the end of the year, she'll be home for like 2 months. She'll be working because everything will be taking place in the Metroplex. So she'll be here close and all that. But other than that, I never know. She has a whiteboard calendar in her room that she writes everything on. I have to go in there and check, like, is she working the day? Like, what's going... Just to find out. But yeah, she works. When she's gone, she usually only takes 1 day off, maybe two. And like, I think she had 2 days off in the 3 weeks or so because she just... She's just trying to get it all done and get it out of there, yeah.
Yeah, all right. Well, I hope everybody has a good week. That's about all the time we have for this episode. Till next time, folks, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.